How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 156 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, and subscribe to the podcast there. Leave a review when you're on that page, and find us on audioboom.com. Log on to normantranscript.com and check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site, and you can find all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. This one following that Thursday night loss, the Thunder loss to Portland, 114-109. Russell Westbrook, 45 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 12 of 36 from the field, 2 of 11 in the fourth quarter. Enes Kanter had 18 and 10. Taj Gibson had 15 and 6. The Thunder had a lead here. They were up 7 with 5.5 minutes to go, and they just let go of it. Portland went on a 16-0 run. The Thunder were up 101-94. Then Portland went up 110-101. The Thunder went on a little bit of a run after. Westbrook had an and one. They missed a few threes with one really strange shot from Westbrook, which ended up leading to an Abrines three to make it a one-point game, but they couldn't pull that 8-0 run to make it 110-109. They couldn't pull in to tie it or to take a lead. Westbrook had a good look off the dribble. I mean, look, there are other guys you'd want taking the three, obviously. You have McDermott now. You've got Abrines, obviously, who Donovan likes to use as an inbounder, was inbounding on this final misdirection play, which was went to Westbrook. But I don't think Westbrook was the first option. I only had a chance to watch that play live. I haven't gone back and rewatched it, but I go back and rewatch it. I think that McDermott might have been the primary option on that play. So they ended up going to Westbrook. Westbrook got a good look off the dribble, left wing, strong screen from Adams, and the ball just didn't go in the basket. It just didn't go in. It could have tied it at 112 if it weren't the case, and the Thunder ended up losing that game 114-109. Let's just get straight into Twitter questions, because I'm not in Portland for this one. I stayed in Oklahoma City. I'm not on the road for this one. I'm not going to be at Phoenix either on Friday night. I'm meeting the team in Dallas on Sunday, taking a couple of road games off. So it's super late for me right now, recording this after I wrote my game story and all that from Oklahoma City. So because of the time difference, it's late. I'm tired. Let's get to Twitter questions. First one from Andrew Schleck. I feel like I'm taking every Andrew Schleck question these days. What's your theory on Steven Adams' play tonight? And I'm going to combine this with one from BPG also, who tweeted at me, "I can't remember the Thunder's bigs getting dominated inside like they did tonight. Was it just Nurkic or scheme game planning by Portland?" So I'm going to talk about Adams first a little bit. This is the second straight not strong game from Adams. He was 1-for-3 from the field. He had 2 points. He had 5 fouls. He only played 24 minutes. He got really knocked around by Nurkic, who played great. Had 18 points, 12 boards. He did a really good job protecting the rim, and not just on Adams' plays. He knocked away a couple of Kanter shots and deterred some other plays around the rim. I mean, he played a really, really nice game from Nurkic. He added 6 assists, too. He passed the ball really well. Wow, he was actually 3 steals away from a 5-by-5, which I didn't even realize looking at the box score now. He had a great line. 18 points, 12 boards, 6 assists. 5 blocks and 2 steals. That's a heck of a game. That was a really good trade by Portland getting him for Plumlee. That was a really nice deal for them. He looks like he's going to be a really good player, and he's still super young, and he is massive. Look, he's a load. There's no question he's a load. Whether you're Steven Adams, anybody else, he's a load. And Steven Adams has had to either guard or go up against some really tough guys the last few games. He had Rudy Gobert to deal with, who is maybe going to win Defensive Player of the Year. Has a really good argument for it. He's going to be first-team all-defense, I imagine. If the voters are paying attention, he's going to be first-team all-defense at the end of the year. So that's obviously not going to do wonders for his offensive game when they played Utah on Tuesday. Before that, you got to deal with the Davis and Cousins combination. It's a tough three-game stretch in terms of just the physicality of the bigs he's going up against. That being said, Steven Adams didn't look like himself tonight. He didn't quite look like himself against Utah. And somebody asked me about it. I think I talked about it on the podcast. I just kind of chalked it up to he went up against Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert is really, really good. So he struggled. And I thought it was an excusable time to struggle when you're going up against just a fantastic defensive player, as good of a defensive player as there is in the NBA right now. This game was a little bit different because it wasn't necessarily... Let's ignore the fact that he had 2 points. Let's ignore the box score, any statistic. He looked off, didn't he? Like, he was particularly inactive off the ball in this game. I don't know why. Like I said, I'm not in Portland. If I were in Portland, I would ask a couple questions, see if he's under the weather or something along those lines. I don't know. I don't know if he is or isn't, because I'm not with them right now. And Steven Adams is not one to tell that. Like, if I asked Steven Adams that straight up, he would say he was fine and there was nothing. Even if he had, you know, a 115 fever and was about to keel over, he would say that he was fine. That's just Steven Adams' personality. But he was inactive. He wasn't setting screens. Like, how many pick and rolls did they run? Now, granted, some of that was the way that Portland defended. Portland wanted Russell Westbrook isolating on those guys. But and they wanted the ball in Westbrook's hands and not necessarily leaving his hands. And they did a pretty good job executing that, especially for a team that's bottom 10 in the league in defensive efficiency. But Adams was particularly inactive. Even on plays where, like, you know, a big would, when he was on defense and whoever he was guarding, you know, whoever it might have been, Myers Leonard or whomever else, would stretch the perimeter. Adams would go out to the perimeter. Maybe he's guarding Al-Farouq Aminu in those moments where he's on the floor with Kanter. And he goes out to the perimeter, and he wasn't really coming over to help. You know, normally Steven Adams is actually, for a guy who's known as a rim protector and a paint defender, he's pretty good at guarding on the perimeter for a guy his size. I'd say he's one of the better centers in the league at that. It's part of what makes him such a good defensive player, his ability to go out there and guard a lot of fours. Now, Aminu is really a small ball four. Like, he's a three who plays the four. But it's not so much the individual defense he was playing on the guys he was guarding. He just looks slow. He's kind of meandering over and help, and he looked a little off. I'm not necessarily going to read into it and project it onto any future games. Steven Adams he's had a really good year. He's been pretty consistent all season, I think. And I think he's been even better in the second half of the season than he was in the first half of the season. So I'm not worried about him. I'm not worried about his caliber of play or anything like that. I'm willing to just say this is probably just a couple of bad games and a couple of tough matchups, and that's it. But it's worth noting. And Billy Donovan did take him out in sparse moments in the fourth quarter. He came out for Kanter with, you know, 2.5, 3 minutes left or so. He came back in. Donovan was going offense, defense. But, you know, it was a night where Kanter kind of worked well offensively, and Adams just did not, which was an unfortunate telling for the Thunder because that hurt them. Next one from Thunder Mob. Lots of talk about playing Oladipo off the bench and starting Abrines. Is the Portland game the counter argument to that? This is a good question, something I probably need to take because I wrote an article about starting Abrines, and I talked about it a little bit on the podcast. One thing that I did mention in that article is that there are going to be games where Abrines would look bad starting. And it's usually against teams who have really good offensive backcourts. You know, if you're going to start Abrines, you're not going to do well against Portland. You're not going to do well against Golden State. And I think there are other ways to go about it too. Look, it's not like he played a ton of minutes. He struggled defensively this game. So did Sabonis. The rookies were not great defensively in this game by any means. That's why we saw 10 minutes from both of them. But you can play it like that. It's going to look better. It's going to look better if Oladipo is healthy. Like, I didn't have a problem with it. And part of this was Abrines' foul trouble, too. Abrines had 5 fouls in 9 minutes and 46 seconds. But if you bring in Oladipo for those minutes off the bench, and he's your 2-guard, like, McDermott played a bunch of minutes in this game. If Oladipo is healthy, I don't think McDermott is playing 37 minutes off the bench. I don't think that's the case. I think he'll play a decent amount, but he's not playing 37 minutes off the bench. You're going to play Oladipo, and you're going to be stronger defensively. So I don't think it's necessarily an argument for not starting. Well, let me rephrase. It is an argument for not starting Abrines. But I think you can still make the argument for Abrines starting, even knowing this, because you can adjust mid-game. And I think with a regular season starting lineup, like if they were playing Portland in a playoff series, if they were playing Golden State in a playoff series, then I wouldn't necessarily advocate for starting Abrines. But I think over the course of the regular season, over the course of these final 21 games, I think starting Abrines, there's a decent chance starting Abrines could help them a little bit more. And remember, like, bringing Oladipo off the bench doesn't necessarily mean decreasing his playing time by 1 minute. You still play him the same amount of minutes. You still play him 32, 33 minutes. That's fine. You just increase Abrines' minutes a little bit. You give him more minutes next to Westbrook where he's better. And you know, nights like this, Oladipo plays most of the minutes with the starters. I think over the long haul, you don't necessarily look at it one game by game. You look at it over the long haul. That being said, you think Abrines should stay on the bench. Oladipo should start. There are a million reasons why. You can check out normantranscript.com. I got an article up there from like 3 or 4 days ago where I lay out all the reasons why it would make sense to start Abrines, why it would make sense to keep Oladipo in the starting lineup whenever he gets back from his back spasms. He's not with the team as of now, by the way. He could meet them on the road trip, but Oladipo is not with the team. They didn't want to have him on the flight because a long flight is not great for you when you're having back issues. So he's missed 4 straight games. They're not sure when he's going to be back. Next question from J Tizzle 35. How much of the offensive woes are on the fact that the ball always seems to be in Westbrook's hands? Limited ball movement, hard to watch. I think it's probably a game-by-game basis. I mean, look, the offensive woes from a seasonal perspective are because the Thunder don't hit threes. It's because they're last in three-point shooting. If they were middle of the pack in three-point shooting, they'd probably be a slightly above-average offense. It's because they don't hit threes. And that's really the number one reason for why the offense struggles. There are great offenses where the ball is always in one guy's hands. I mean, you look at Houston. The ball is always in Harden's hands. He creates everything for everybody. And that is the second best offense in the league right now behind Golden State. Matter of fact, it's the second best NBA offense on a points per possession basis in years. It's great. So you can be really good and have that philosophy. That being said, against Portland, it hurt him. Like some of those games, it's not that the ball is in Westbrook's hands. It's just in those moments where he unravels late in games sometimes. And it's the same qualities that allow him to take over late in games most of the time. But you know, Kenny Smith said it. One in every 10 games, one in every 12 games, whatever it is, you're going to get that game from Westbrook where he puts up 36 shots. He's not quite making them, and they're just not going in late. When the shots are going in, they look great. I don't think he did that much differently in this game than he does on other games. I don't think he did, but when the shots don't go in, it just doesn't look good. It just doesn't look good. And when you miss 24 shots in a game, it's just not going to look good when you're missing them in lieu of giving it up to other people. That being said, he didn't get a lot of help. He didn't get a lot of help in this game at all. It would be cool to see him have maybe a little bit more of a chemistry with Kanter. Not more of a chemistry, but to see him take advantage of his chemistry with Kanter. Because they're good in the pick and roll, and they're good in pick and pop, and they're good in a lot of things, and it would be cool to see him take advantage of that a little bit more. But I think when you talk about a guy holding on to the ball too much, he definitely holds on to it a little bit too much. But to say that it's the reason that the Thunder offense is down, like if it's the reason for the offensive woes, I wouldn't say that. Everything's a contributing factor, but that's pretty far down the list, I would say. Even if on certain nights, like in the Portland night, in the Portland game, or even in the first Phoenix game or something like that, which they won, that was a problem that led to some offensive problems, for sure. When he took 44 shots or whatever it was, like that was a problem, all those mid-range shots. And he's not shooting well from mid-range this year. I know Billy Donovan always says Russell Westbrook taking a pull-up mid-range J is a good shot. He likes him there, you know, regardless of, you know, what the numbers for overall mid-range pull-ups say. He thinks that's a good shot for him because he's so good from it. Russell Westbrook shooting 33% from mid-range right now. From 16 feet to the three-point line, according to Basketball Reference, he's shooting 33%. That's not good at all. That's horribly inefficient shot. And he's taking a lot of them. He's taking a ton of mid-range shots. Teams would love him to take those shots. If you're going to eliminate shots from his arsenal, those are the ones. Those mid-range pull-ups. if he can eliminate those, which he kind of did last year, he's reverted in terms of the number of mid-range shots he's taken. Those are the ones that would bother me if I were Billy Donovan the most. Those mid-range pull-ups. Those would be the ones that would bother me the most, especially when they're contested and early in the shot clock. Last question from JoJo. Can OKC reach the 4 seed? Let's check the standings. All right, so I'm going to read this off. This is as of the conclusion of Thursday night, March 2nd's games. Utah is in the 4, 37-24. The Clippers are 36-24 in the 5 seed, a half a game back of Utah, tied in the loss column. Memphis is the 6 seed, one back of Utah, one back in the loss column. And the Thunder are the 7 seed, two back of Utah, two back in the loss column. I haven't done out all of those teams' schedules the rest of the year. The Thunder can get the 4 seed. They're better after these trades. I think they're better after signing Norris Cole, who played well tonight considering the circumstances under which he was playing. First game with the Thunder, he'd just come over. He didn't know anything. He hasn't had a practice. He played well. He did a good job. He looked like he belonged, which was, I imagine they have to be happy with what they got out of Norris Cole. I think they'll pass Memphis. I think this team with the new additions is better than Memphis, and I think it can pass Memphis. But the Clippers are really a 55-win team caliber-wise with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin back when they got those two guys and DeAndre Jordan. That's a 55-win team, and I think that team's going to get the 4 or the 5. And I think Utah's going to be the other one. So my prediction is that the Thunder end up with the 6 seed. That would put them in all likelihood playing Houston in the first round. But can they get the 4 seed? Yeah, it's plausible. They have no games left against the Clippers. That hurts them a little bit. One left against Utah. That's March 11th. One left against Memphis all the way at the end of the year. That could be a big game. They play them April 5th. The fourth, fifth, the last game of the year, something like that. That could end up being a big game. But I think it's definitely possible getting to the 4. I think Utah and the Clippers are a little bit too talented. You look at the net ratings, too. I know the Thunder are better than their net rating right now. If only because, you know, they brought in Gibson, they brought in McDermott, they brought in Cole, you know, Cantor's healthy, all that stuff. So they're a little bit better than what their net rating implies. But Utah's higher ranked in offense, they're higher ranked in defense. They're on the fringe of a top 10 offense, and they're second or third in defense right now. Thunder are on the fringe of a top 10 defense and all the way bottom half of the league in offense. So I just don't see them passing Utah, even though they've beaten them a couple times, which obviously helps. Remember, I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. Head on to iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Thunder there. Questions, comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter, @FredKatz, FredKatz. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs, and check out Thunder Road to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder there. That's going to do it for today. I'm off for the weekend. I'm back Sunday after the Dallas game. The Thunder play in Phoenix Friday. They're off Saturday. They won't practice because it'll follow a back-to-back, and then they're going to be in Dallas on Sunday, and I'll be podcasting from Dallas after that game. But until then, Locked On Thunder is locking up.